Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Bone of the Mo Thugs movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in the world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. we got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'm gonna ask you this though, what do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. You know, tonight's show is a tremendous opportunity for me. You know, I generally deal with the boxers. I generally just do my Legends in Boxing show. And I was doing an injustice in the sport. I truly was doing an injustice. You know, there's a lot of women aspects to the sport that not only participate, but they work behind the scenes. They help build the sport. They help encapsulate what boxing means to you and me. And so, with that being said, I dug a little bit deeper, and I found somebody that's very correlated with the sport, very respected in the sport. And I realized that I had to have her on my show. So with that being said, welcome the First Lady of Boxing, Miss Shelley Williams. Shelley, how you doing?
Hi, Don. Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's really an honor.
Well, I'm actually nervous tonight. That's a different thing for me. I'm never nervous, you know.
Oh, you're so sick. It's just me, Don. It's just me.
Oh,
I'm the
yeah,
one who's supposed to be nervous, you know.
Right. You know, I want to start off on a different aspect than probably any other interview you've ever been on. You know, you were very close with your father. Your father adapted you to the sport, showed you the sport. What type of knowledge, now looking back at those days, has Shelley Williams ascertained from the man that showed her the path she walks today?
Okay, you're going to get me choked up right from the middle, aren't you? I'm sorry. My dad taught me everything I needed to know to start me out in life. He was a big man. He was a kind, soft-spoken man. And he loved, loved, loved the fight game. And when you're an only child, you kind of have to be the boy and the girl, and the best and the worst and the youngest and the oldest and all those things all together. So whatever he wanted to do, and probably he was teaching me so many life lessons that I didn't even know as a child that I take to my adulthood and my love of the sport. But Gillette Friday night fights were always a big night in our house. My mom just kind of disappeared into her room doing her sewing and doing her girl thing. And then I remember my dad had very long, not very long, but long black hair. And he had an old blue easy chair, a rocking chair, and I would climb to the top of it, sit on it, and my little feet would hang over, and I would comb his hair, and we would watch the fights and really get into it. And then when I grew up, I, of course, you know, you go through different stages in life, and then I return to the love of the fight game now that I'm old enough to drive and to go to the fights. And so then the table turned, and I went and picked up my daddy, and he was older, much older by then, and I just came to fights with me. And it was always my most treasured moments and memories of my life. His name was Leo.
Yeah. You know, Shelley, tremendous aspect that gave the sport an added value that it needed. How hard was it for a woman to make it in a vastly male opportune sport?
Well, it truly was the hardest gig I've ever had in my life, but I was at the point in my life after spending, you know, it's funny how the patterns and I think follow us. I went into law, not meaning to go into law. It just sort of came to me and pulled me into it. And that's nothing but fighting. And so then fast forward, being in law 25 years and then going into boxing, and now I'm still fighting. And getting to be a woman in the fight game, this has been 30 years ago since I first started being in the fight game. And it was a few years after that I actually started working in it. And back then, the only woman was, in my opinion, and everyone's opinion, and should be their opinion, is she is the queen of boxing, Miss Jackie Callan. Jackie was the one. She had James Lights Out Tony, and she was the woman that was the face of women in boxing. And here I was, this little chubby blonde girl that shows up from Los Angeles, moved to Las Vegas, decided I was going to manage professional boxers, didn't know a hook from a jab in the real world of boxing nor the business end. And she took me under her wing. She did not have to do that. And she had already, you know, been thrown against the ropes more times than she could count. And so she really guided me through that path of Bernays. Like I said before, I just was in the puddle thing most of the time because my little feelings were so hurt because I was so clueless and so sensitive. And they tried to run me out because I was a girl in boxing, but I stayed the course and decided I wasn't going to give up. And they eventually got used, and now we're all good.
Yeah, you know, that's what I love about boxing is if you're persistent. You know, at first, because I was in the sport, that's how I originally started photography, was in the sport of boxing. You know, and then I stepped away for a little bit, and then trying to come back, it wasn't so easy. You know, and it was kind of crazy because, you know, MMA, you know, you leave for a little bit, you come back, and everything is fine and dandy. Well, the brotherhood and the sisterhood, as we talked about before the show, it's a little tight in boxing. They're not as open arms to let an aspect back that walked away because I guess they feel like you've walked away from family. You know, Shelley, you've gone on to create tremendous, tremendous aspects. But I think there was a point in your career that even, you know, probably made you realize that, hey, you know, I am being recognized. Hey, I'm working with the best in the world. And that was through Eddie Futch. What were those moments? Take me and my listeners through some of those moments that were shared, remembered, and the knowledge you've taken from there.
I have so many memories of Eddie Futch. What a prince man he was. A great loss to the world of boxing when he passed away. My first encounter with Eddie Futch was, I want to say, at the Rio in Las Vegas. I think James Lights Out Tony was fighting on that card. And Eddie was in line, and I happened to be right in a close proximity to him. And the people at the gate were a little bit clueless about anybody in boxing, and they were treating him very, very poorly. And I remember getting indignant about the whole thing. I tried to make sense to the person that was handling the gate nicely, and they still continue to be not very nice to him and, in my opinion, disrespectful. So I trotted I just left the line and I trotted into the Rio and I asked for the head cheese there, and they brought him out, and he was just, you know, just devastated at the fact that anybody would disrespect Eddie Futch. So that's how I originally met Eddie Futch. And then fast forward a little while after that, I started working with him. And he and his wife took me to the International Boxing Hall of Fame in 2001, I believe it was. And I got to be a little fly on the wall and just watch all the great legends that were alive then. And I thought, oh, I used to sit there and eat a bagel with Kid Gavilan, or, you know, just you all the greats, the old school greats. And I'd look up to heaven and say, oh, Daddy, how cool is this? This is just the best. So that night there was a fight, and it was Ollie Fazier 4, actually. It was the daughters fighting at the Hall of Fame. And again, Angelo Dundee's there, who was, of course, in Ollie's corner. Futch was in Frazier's corner for the trilogy of Ollie Fazier, greatest trilogy in our generation, certainly. And once again, the disrespect happened. They didn't know of any better, but they put Futch and Dundee in nosebleed. I was upset. Tried to talk sense into them again. I said, please, don't you know? I said, look, this is televised. I understand you have Sugar Ray Leonard ringside. Totally deserves to be ringside. But what does he have to do with this, the trilogy of Frazier and Ali, and certainly of this fourth fight because of the daughters? I said, so just think, now you have your television cameras there, they're panning ringside, and you have Butch and you have Dundee ringside. That's what they want to see, don't you see? And then finally, I had gotten to get the head person there. It was an Indian casino, and he came out and he saw my logic, and I ran up to nosebleed and I brought those two legends down and set them in their chair. There they were, and they enjoyed the fight. Those kind of things were. Mr. Futch was so respected that people who didn't respect him didn't know any better. You know, I can't fault them for that, but although you shouldn't disrespect anybody. And he taught me so much. I would sit, you know, every day of my life with him for a very long time and got to take care of him and watch over him. And he did the same for me. We were just the best of friends, and I miss him every day. It was one of my greatest blessings in the sport of boxing, no doubt.
And, you know, that's the aspect of life that I think enthralls us more about the sport. You know, everybody wants to think the sport is what they see on social media or television, but it truly isn't. You know, I, as a young man that lived in Northern California, you know, I had a couple of knucklehead buddies, one being Tony the Tiger Lopez, and the other being Lorenzo Garza. And we had a little friend that liked to follow us around every once in a while, and that was Diego Chico Corrales, as we know him today. God bless his soul.
Oh, rest his soul, rest his soul. Yeah. Yes.
You know, you walked into a male-dominant sport. You got the aspects and the respect of Eddie Futch. What does it mean for Shelley Williams to look at people like Muhammad Ali, Ken Norton, Frazier, all those aspects? Because I look back at an interview I did with Joey Giambra Sr., and a lot of people in the sport go, who is that? Well, you know, I'll fill you in. He fought from 1949 to 1963. He was known as the uncrowned champion. He refused to throw a fight for the mob, so he never got a title defense. I had that man on my show, and he was 83 years old. And
wow. He just passed away this year, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yes.
And yes. He told some stories about how Marilyn Monroe had a crush on him, and Joe DiMaggio really didn't like it. You know, and
he was a good-looking guy, Don.
Well, yeah, I agree, but, you know, that wasn't very nice of Marilyn, but... But, you know, yeah. There was an incident at a fight, and he correlated it quite well on the show. And I'm sitting here, I'm realizing that not only am I getting to interview somebody who is a boxer, but was a true part of boxing. And to go back to my question, what does it mean to you to be affiliated and loved by those who truly created aspects of the sport that we love today?
It means everything to me. My heart has always been with elderly people, and those legends that we knew of as our legends, they had crossed the line into elderly, just like I am now. You know, we grow up, we get older, and I just have such respect for them, and it's such an honor for me. I sometimes have to pinch myself to think of the beautiful people and the champions and the legend, the boxing royalty that God has put in my path over the last 30 years. Sometimes I just shake my head and just thank him for it. And now what I want to do is to use whatever platform that I've built, and with a lot of work and blood, sweat, and tears and a lot of love, and help them, because they are walking this earth after the lights are dim and there's nobody in the arena anymore cheering for them. They have no money. They have no home. They have no one to care about them. Their brains are scrambled. And that is what I want to do in this world, if the time that I have left, to help them somehow form something. I don't even know how to begin. If anybody has any ideas, if they want to call in, I'd love to chat with them about it, because we have to do something. There are legends, and they need to be treated with dignity and respect that they earned while we were watching them and they were entertaining us in the ring. Back in those days, 15 rounds, that's no joke, the damage that happens to these fighters, 15 rounds of boxing.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, I don't know if you know that I'm very well correlated with Ring 8 and Ring 10. You know,
yes.
I've done a lot of shows through Matt Farago. I think what they're doing for the fighters is tremendous. But I think you're right. It's not enough. You know, I truly believe it's not enough. You know, these men went out there and literally beat the hell out of each other
mm-hmm.
for our pleasure. Why can't
yes.
we give back to the people that gave
yes,
to us?
Yes, and you're right. Ring 8 and Ring 10 have done a wonderful job. Ring 10 just stepped up and helped a world-renowned fighter that needed help. And Jackie Richardson of the Retired Boxers Foundation reached out, and they were glad to help. And there's so many that are helping. Henry Haskup, all the people in Atlantic City, they're a real brotherhood and a real sisterhood in boxing back there. They're no joke. They step up and they help. I'm amazed at them. I was blessed to go to their Hall of Fame induction last year and was treated with so much love by these people who I never met in my life, and I have such respect. The gentleman known as Rich Boxer, I don't even know what Rich's last name is, but he's a little energizer bunny, and he and his wife Phyllis are just working tirelessly to do fundraising events. I believe it's coming up, I want to say March 21st or March 22nd, and a lot of the champs that were there in Atlantic City are just there. They show up to help their brothers that are in need. It takes a village at that point to help them after their fall, as much as it took the village to get them to a world championship.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I've dealt with aspects as we speak, you know, and I think a lot more needs to be done. I think I'll get back with those organizations and see if we can do another special to kind of create something, because people don't realize that they give food cards, they pay rent, they pay for medical visits for these
yes.
these ex-world champions and fighters, and you know that right there is heart-wrenching. You know, it's a bittersweet aspect of the sport. We're willing to pay hundreds of, if not thousands of dollars to go see a fighter, but we're not
mm-hmm.
willing to dig and grab $10, $20, $30 out of our pocket to to give to an organization that takes care of the sport that we love. You know, I had an opportunity in life, and it truly changed me as a man. You know, and I'm not certain if you've had this opportunity, but I got an opportunity to meet Muhammad Ali on a one-on-one basis. And he handed me a Book of the Muslims autographed by him. And then he slowly did the rope-a-dope. And then he put his hand across the side of my head, and he gave me a kiss on my forehead. The first thing that came to mind was, my God, this man's hands are huge, because it covered from the chin, my chin, to the back of my head. And I'm like, geez, I'd hate to get hit by that. But the love that that man had, you know, he was sick at that time. But the love that that man had for everybody was second to none. And then I got to move to Missouri, and I got to meet another legend of the sport, being Leon Spinks. And I had him sign the other side of the book for me. You know, when you look at those types of aspects, those people that you can't even really put words to what they've given to the sport, how does that change? How does that evolve a person like you, Shelley?
I look at Muhammad Ali's fight with Leon Spinks. Nobody in the world thought Spinks would have a chance to beat the greatest. Certainly not. What did he have, like 6 or 7 fights in life, and he showed up and he becomes heavyweight champion of the world? They have to keep in mind the time and the effort that he and his brother Michael both did, you know, being Olympic medalists, being champions of the world, and then to get that opportunity. And I look at it now, and I look at the brain damage suffered by Muhammad Ali, the Parkinson's disease, the struggles that Leon has had and certainly is having as we speak over the years. It's heartbreaking and heart-wrenching to me, and it fuels the flame when I am over at Leon's house and I'm spending time with him. It fuels the flame to me for me to do something, but I don't know where to begin. I don't know where to begin, Don. I just don't know. I think we all have to unite and do our part. And everybody knows somebody that can help. Every little bit helps when you get to that point. Leon's such a fighter. His constitution is so strong, and his respect for Muhammad Ali is unsurpassed in this world. And I want to help him, and too late to help Muhammad, but he lived an amazing life, and he showed us what real grace was in the way that he lived his life with the ravages of Parkinson's disease. Such respect I have for him, both of them, and all of them.
Oh, most definitely. And Leon, he's a character, you know. when I first met him, it was like 22 years ago, and he was working at a buddy of mine's gym, and we had all been out that night drinking. And if anybody knows Leon Spinks, you know he drinks Courvoisier, double Courvoisier, and he's not going to drink nothing else, so there's nothing cheap for the champ. But, well, anyway, he had a little bit too much, so he went back to the gym a little bit earlier than we did. And when we came back, we had happened to look in on him, and we saw Leon sleeping, sucking his thumb. And we were like, oh, we got him, we got him. So we ran down to the corner store, and back in those days we bought those chintzy disposable 35mm cameras. And we came back and we took pictures, and we got them processed.
Oh,
and
you didn't.
We posted them all over the gym. And I'll send you a picture, because Leon, being the kind-hearted, true man he is, he took one and he signed it, Sweet Dreams, Leon Spinks, and he handed it to me. I thought he was going to kill us.
Oh, would you send that to me, Don? I would just die to have.
Most definitely.
He has that personality.
You know,
he is so quick-witted. Oh, he's so funny. Always makes me laugh. He walks into a room and that smile of his, I don't care who's in the room and who they are and what level of champion, the light's always on Leon because of that smile and the love energy he feeds to everybody that crosses his path.
Most definitely. And, you know, For me, it was his laugh. You know.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a contagious laugh. It's funny, and you know, he's such a great spirit. You know, Shelley, now that you've been in the sport all these years, you know, you've dealt with the likes of James Toney, James Quiktillis. I mean, there's just, I mean, I could go on and name fighter after fighter after fighter that respects you. Did you ever realize now, looking over your shoulder, or did you ever surmise that you would play an aspect, a pivotal aspect, not only in their lives, but in the sport?
Never. Never. It's funny, you know, Don, I honestly came here from Los Angeles after my father had died. I had just gotten over having cancer, and I decided to start a new life. And I showed up here clueless as I could possibly be, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I didn't know. I never aspired to do anything but make a fighter great and let him get his dreams. That's just how I rolled. I didn't know any better. So as I rolled down this highway called boxing, and, you know, the fifth year, the 10th year, the 15th, 20th, 25th, 30th year, and I look back on it, and I kind of am a little bit amazed and feel really blessed that I've crossed paths with guys like Ken Norton. He was one of my very favorites. Talk about a funny guy with a sense of humor. He and Muhammad Ali together were a hoot, a really big hoot. One night in the middle of the night, anybody who knows me knows you don't call me after 8 o'clock because I'm probably sleeping because I'm old. But my phone rang, and it was Ken Norton. It was probably midnight, and he said, "Shelley, get up. I'm bored. You need to get me a job. I'm sick of looking at this television, okay?" I said, okay. So the next day I put on my suit and my pumps and my pearls, and I hit the street, and I got him a job, and he and Rose Norton, his wife, moved here. And we got to have him here in Las Vegas for all those years before he passed. And that was such a blessing when I think of that Ken Norton. Wow, I used to watch him with my daddy. Whoever thought that would happen? I did have my favorites, for sure. I had my favorites, and he
tremendous?
Was one of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but you also dealt with another one that is a real brother of mine. And, you know, I think the sport didn't give this man as much credit as they truly did, and that's Livingstone Bramble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Livingstone is probably one of the most righteous guests I've ever had on as a warrior on my show. You know, very open, very candid, but also a very loving individual in life. You know, when you look at aspects, you know, and I think today it's more, you know, played out, but if you look at Livingstone Bramble, he was more of the persona, the character, but he was a man that had an undying love for boxing, you know. And we talk about these people and we bring up stories because we love the sport that created who we are and where we're at today. You know, there's aspects in the sport that people will never understand unless you walk that path. You know, Shelley, sometimes in life we walk by a mirror or we're walking down a pathway in a park and we look down and we see our reflection. But for this moment, we get that deep reflection into who we are. Who does Shelley Williams see?
I see my daddy. I look just like him. And he made me the woman that I am. He gave me a compassion for the sport that you have to have. I would hope people would have. Because if you don't take proper care and do your homework, your fighter's going to get hurt in the ring, if not killed in the ring. And it's happening more and more and more as we see it because of poor matchmaking. And I think that we all in boxing need to take a good look at ourselves and ask ourselves, why are we in it? And is our 33 and a third percent worth the life of the child, the young man or the young woman that is put in the ring? If we haven't done our homework, they could die. So we best do our homework. That's how I feel about that. I don't even get me started on it. I just get furious because the matchmakers got mad at me. At one point, I had about probably close to 200 men and women on a registry, and I had my law background, so I was really efficient. I got things done. I dotted I's, crossed T's. My fighters were on the airplane. They had their federal ID. They had their medicals. They had their suit and tie for the press conference. That's what I did. But I made a lot of them mad, the matchmakers, because I would not throw them in there like a pork chop for my cut. I wouldn't do it. Maybe it's the woman in me. Maybe I was a little too overprotective. I don't know. But that stopped the day that heavyweight champion of the world, Greg Page, stepped into a ring in, where was he? I don't know. I think it was Ohio. It was close to Louisville where he lived. And he was going to fight for a state championship fight, past his prime, out of shape, for a crummy $1,500. And he stepped into that ring with Dale Crow, and he became paralyzed. And he didn't get to die that day. He had to suffer paralyzed for, what, 6-7 years? And that day, I stopped, and I never managed to fire again. Never booked one, never managed one, nothing. Couldn't do it. They threw Greg in there just like a tomato can bum. That's what they called them. I hate those terms. Hate them. But that's what they refer to people that are journeymen past their prime. And they go in there because they need the money to feed their kids. That makes me furious. So that was the end of my career as a manager. But it wasn't a real long time of doing it. Well, it was many, many years, but I got to work with Michael Dokes and James Quick-Tillis, which were my two favorite babies. You know, they were all my babies. All these fighters. I didn't have kids, so, yep, they were my babies, and I protected them like crazy. And I love them all, and I thank God for all of them. I didn't give birth to them, but they were mine. Yes, sir.
Right. You know, how proud of you were you of James Quick-Tillis being one of the only fighters, well, the first fighter ever to take Mike Tyson the full distance?
He was my greatest joy, James Quick-Tillis. Boy, did he teach me a lot. Did he ever teach me a lot. I was so young and so clueless. And he and Dokes really took me under their wing. And Doc Brodus, Foreman's trainer, Charles Doc Brodus, he took me under his wing. He was a trainer, of course. And taught me so much. And when I went into National Boxing Hall of Fame, James presented me for induction. That was such a proud moment to have my kid present me, you know. It was really one of those days in time, those moments in time that you just never forget.
Well, you know, you're a very recognized figure in the sweet science. And you've done tremendous things for the sport. But I kind of want to ask you an elephant in the room question. You know, here we sit and we talk about the greatest male legends that ever stepped foot in a ring. Do you feel that the sport hasn't done as much for the women, encapsulating them and driving and motivating them as a part of boxing as much as they should have?
Oh, well, that's a whole other show all by itself, Dawn. When I stepped into the position as commissioner of the International Female Boxers Association, which was, gosh, probably 20 years ago when women's boxing was on the upswing and we were on ESPN, we were always televised, and things were looking up for female boxing, but the rise was meteoric, and then pretty soon it fizzled out and nobody cared anymore. And I watched these women fight to get to the top, and there was never even enough money for lunch money for them. It was pathetic, and it was shameful. And they're still treating them like that today. It's a very disrespectful, in my opinion, and I don't know why it is. Anybody that watched UFC, was it 248, whatever it was, the other night, did you see the fight, the females that fight, the female from China, Weili Zhang, and Johanna, I don't know how to pronounce her last name.
JJ.
Many men that we're talking about it said that, they, including Dana White, says they don't think they'll ever see a bout like that, man or woman, ever again in life. It was that good, like fight of the year and future Hall of Fame material. These two women have so much respect for them. And they and then the Layla Ali's and the Clarissa Shields and our wonderful, our my beloved Christy Martin, of course, she's going into the International Boxing Hall of Fame. The first time in 30 years women were allowed to be inducted. And hats off to Ed Brophy that he finally saw the light. And we have a few wonderful women going into that Hall of Fame in June, and I'm so very proud of them. And I'm just hoping that in the future that maybe people will take a second look at the women and give them the respect that they deserve.
You know, I truly do, too. You know, I've interviewed Layla Ali. I've had Aaron Tohill. They both fought each other. You know, and really when you look at the older aspects of the sport, that's really one of the few fights that pop up as far as being a part of their original sweet science. Let me ask you a question that, you know, many are torn apart on. You know, you look at the sport as it is today, do you feel it's been watered down? Do you feel it doesn't have the stature of the sport that we grew up and truly loved?
Yes, I do. I do, and I think a lot of it is the fault of too many sanctioning bodies. You know, it used to be you could walk down the street and Joe on the street and say, who's the heavyweight champion of the world? He could give you a name. Now, can't do that because it has been watered down. There's too many, and too many splits of the weight divisions. And then there's the baby belts, and then the baby belts, and then the baby belts. And it's just, it's a farce. And it takes what should be the highest respect in the sport, and it waters it down, like you say. I don't care for it at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have Paul Bankey listening to the show. You know, I'm going to bring him on in just a second, let him ask a question or two. But, you know, I seen a post the other day, and it kind of made me smile. And it was a different world for you. You had an opportunity, a moment to have a brother of mine from Team AKA, Habib Nurmagomedov, you actually were able to correlate, interview him, and have some different aspects in life with him. What's it like for you to transition over from the sweet science into the world of MMA for a moment?
Oh, well, that's a big one. That's a really big one. But I think that I always like a good challenge and to learn new things. I was at that press conference, and there were two different sets of fighters that came in that were managed by Dominance, which is a management company of MMA fighters. And then, of course, different ones had different promotional companies, UFC or Professional Fighters League with Ray Sefo. And I have to tell you, it was just like my very first day on the job in boxing. I was clueless, and I just didn't know what to do with myself. They didn't provide names, a list of names of all these people, and so many of them are from foreign lands, and their names are just have 20 letters in their last name. You can't pronounce it, and I didn't know who they were. If there were boxers up there, I would know all of them, but I didn't know. And God bless this sweet man. His name was George, I think Hernandez, they call him Gorgeous George with MMAJunkie.com radio. And he had pity on me. And every time I would look at him with that look like, who's that? He flipped up his phone and he would put their name in there and then he would hand it to me so I'd be able to spell it correctly. God bless him. He was my angel from heaven that day. And I just felt so incompetent and so inferior and just felt like the only, one of the very few girls in the room. And I thought, oh gosh, do I really want to do this? And I thought, yes, I do. I can learn this just like I learned boxing. And for the record, I was not able to get to Habib for that interview. He was there, but I was not able to interview him. But I will.
Yeah,
I got to interview Ray Sefo, which was my very first interview from Professional Fighters League. He was a great champion in martial arts and really a prince of a man. I was lucky to be able to interview him for my very first interview.
Yeah, Ray's a great guy, but we're going to have to make that Habib interview happen for you, you know. We're talking a little
awesome.
Bit more my world.
So awesome. You're going to have to be my mentor in this because I am one clueless girl, but I'm up for the challenge.
We'll see what we can.
You say you have Paul Behnke on the line, and, you know, Paul Behnke is being inducted into the National Boxing Hall of Fame April 26th in Montebello. And so we're very excited about that, very proud of Paul Behnke and all that he's done for the fight game.
Well, Paul, I just unmuted you, brother. What do you feel hearing the words that Shelly just emulated towards your induction?
Well, hey, Don, thank you for bringing Shelly on. Shelly's a beautiful woman, a beautiful person. Guy, I love hearing, I'm old school, and I love hearing her story. Guy, I knew a lot, but I didn't know that much. What she shared with, like, you know, about Ken Norton, Ken and Majab. That was awesome. Deal. I love Eddie Fudd's story. Oh, my gosh. I mean, she had history. I love history. That's what, you know, I want next time I see her, start picking her brain. I mean, you know, Doc Brokers. I mean, I love that stuff. That's what I wanted when I heard her. She was on your show. I wanted to hear her story. You know what I mean?
Thank you, Paul. Thank you so much.
You know, Paul, being a male figure in the sport, you know, what does it mean for someone like yourself, knowing that there is aspects like Shelly Williams that are out there that are not only helping get the fighters opportunities, but taking care of them as if they were her own children?
You know, like Shelly said earlier, she, you know, where she's at, she's a platform. She can use her platform where she's at. I mean, Shelly is recognized in the boxing game. And so it's an opportunity. I mean, if they can, I mean, there's so many fighters left. I mean, these baseball players and these football players retire. They have their union. They had a boxing union. They're okay. Boxing, we don't got the union like that. We don't got it like that. So do we need help from other people? Yeah, people need help. So Shelly, just for Shelly doing all that stuff and helping other people is a blessing, you know what I mean? And for her being a woman, It's super blessing, you know, for her. I mean, you know, I was ready to talk.
I feel you there.
Thanks, Paul. It means a lot coming from you, honey. Thank you.
Hey, Paul, one more question before I put you back on hold, brother.
Okay.
You know, we talk about the older aspects of the sport, and this is, I'm going to pose this to both of you, but I'm going to have Paul answer it first, and then I'll kind of wrap things up with you, Shelly, because I know it's getting late. You know, we've seen Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder. And what happened after that, truly, in my eyes, gave the sport a black eye. You know, what were your thoughts on the way the fans, aspects of the sport, demean both fighters, you know, after the fight?
Well, when you say black, I thought it was a great fight. I'm a Wilder fan. I'm a Tyson Fury fan.
But
what
I mean by a black eye, what I mean by a black eye is the hate that was construed by not only the fans, but some aspects of the media towards Deontay Wilder, towards Tyson Fury, saying that he didn't have the gloves on correctly. Do you feel that it diminished the aspect of them two gladiators stepping in the ring?
You know what? That's going to happen to every, you know, Tyson Fury fight. It can happen to the low fights, the big fights. Everybody's going to criticize something. Everybody's going to put some words in negative stuff. And so, you know, everybody has an opinion, but that's boxing is at its best, I think. You know what I'm saying? At its best. I'm happy Sally's on.
Most definitely. All right, Paul, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother, so you can listen to the remainder of the show. I appreciate it.
Love you, Shelly.
Love you too, Paul. Thanks for calling in, honey.
Yeah. You know, Shelly, let me ask you the same question, but I'll pose it in a different narrative. You know, to me it was a great lead-up. You know, you watch, because for years many said that, you know, boxing would never make a rise again because there wasn't a true heavyweight champion. And then you see all these aspects, you know, start correlating with Joshua, Fury, Wilder. And, you know, the sport was gaining momentum. And, you know, you have four or five tremendous heavyweights that are truly, you know, pound for pound, the greatest in the new era of the sport. And then you have this, which I think is a wonderful fight, you know, between Wilder and Fury. But you, as the management aspect, the social media aspect, the journalistic aspect, you saw what was perplexed weeks after the fight. To me, I think it diminishes the sport. What are your thoughts on what you've seen that was being perplexed on social media about both fighters?
Well, I think it... you know, much respect to Deontay Wilder and to Tyson Fury, first of all. And Mark Breland, of course. Mark Breland did the right thing, and I'm glad that Deontay Wilder's team decided to bring him back. He cared about his fighter. He didn't care about his payday, and much respect. He always has been that way. This is nothing new for Mark Breland.
Oh, no.
I think it's shameful that they're bringing up this crazy notion that he did something to his gloves. Listen, that's not going to happen in this day and age. That's just not going to happen. And the man has mad skills, and they have to give him his respect. Deontay, it wasn't his night that night, for sure. And he'll go back to the drawing board, and he'll be okay. I'm a little sad that they're exercising their rematch clause and that it will be so soon, because I think it's probably going to be more of the same, when I think the world of boxing probably just wants to see AJ fight Tyson Fury. It'll be the greatest thing that ever hit Great Britain ever in life. And that'll be a better fight, but we don't always get what we want in this business. And Tyson Fury, I have to tip my hat to him with regard to taking millions and millions of dollars that were given to him for his two fights with Wilder and just handing it over to help the poor. How can you not respect that man on so many levels? He suffered so much in his life with so many problems, and he emerged the victor. And I love that the sun is shining on him today.
Oh, most definitely. You know, he gave well over the excess of $9 million. So, I mean, you know, we're not talking about a little bit of money, people. We're talking about a massive amount of money. You know, and I love the sport the way it's finally getting the momentum, the attention that it truly deserves, because I, as with you, you know, I remember being a kid and rushing home to watch the fights with Howard Cosell. You know,
down goes
a lot of people. People ask me, "Who is Howard Cosell?" You know, are you serious? But the sad part is true. You know, you mentioned Mark Breland. You know, tremendous man. I've had him on my show many times, and you know, it's sad because when I jumped into the new era of boxing and I started to correlate them with some of the old legends, you know, it was sad. And I'll be quite honest, and some people might say, no, it's not true, but it is true. You know, the fact is that some of these newer fighters, if you mention the greats from the past, they don't know who they are. And I find it perplexing because here you have a legend that created the path that you walk, but you don't truly know the extent of the sport that you're in, where you came from. And to me, that's a little mind-blowing, you know, because I've had Mark Breland, I've had Marlon Starling, I've had just about every legend of the sport that, you know, that is still alive today and that is still very capable of speaking. And I tell you what, the stories that they can tell, you could sit there and listen for hours and hours.
That whole Olympic era was just mind-blowing, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. But see, here's another, you brought up a good point, and, you know, I'm going to kind of wrap things up here shortly because I promised you only 45 minutes. But, you know, to these new champs and these new fighters that are out there, when you listen to the old school of sport, their great memories aren't of winning that world title. They aren't of all their great accolades once they became pro. It was the Golden Gloves.
Yes.
You know,
that's so
true. It starts in your. It is. It's an absolutely true statement. You know, I was amazed when I first started, you know, adding the Legends of Boxing to my network, because I heard that story so many times. I don't care about any of the belts that I've ever won. You know, I lost my necklace with my Golden Gloves on it, and that meant everything in the world to me. And we talked about charities. Well, it was tremendous because I can't remember the fighter's name, but Matt Farrago went and had a replica. I think it was the Harlem.
Was it
Harlem
Alex
Butcher.
Ramos? I think it was Alex Ramos.
Yeah,
I know I love me some Alex Ramos. What a great little fighter he was.
Yeah, but you know, that's what's wonderful about the sweet sciences. It's not about the world titles that they accrued, but the moments they had together in their youth.
Yeah.
You know, to hear.
Isn't it fun to go to the Halls of Fame and watch them that were such bitter rivals just love each other up at the Halls of Fame? And it's so real and it's so beautiful for them to have those
really
moments
is.
Together. And
well,
they always go back to those amateur days. You're absolutely right. The topic always goes back there. So beautiful.
And I think Riddick Bowe said it best. He said, you know, we may talk crap to each other. We may not even like each other. But after you shed blood with another man, you become brothers.
Wow.
And
Bowe said that? That's beautiful.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you think about it, and, you know, it's like I sit back and I think about it all the time because me and Jacob's sister Ann are really good friends and we share a lot of stories. But to really look at it like that, you know, it defines it so much more and it puts so much more on it. You know, Shelley, I got a final question for you because I know it's getting a little late for you. When it's all said and done, my friend, how would Shelley Williams truly like to be remembered in the sport?
Now you're getting me choked up again. My fighters, most of them call me Mama, and I guess probably that I was a good mother to them. That's all.
That's tremendous. You know, Shelley, I know 45 minutes or 53 minutes, whatever we've been on, isn't enough time to peel back the layers that
you... I could talk to you forever.
Right? Well, we've got other opportunities down the road, my friend. You know, this is the first of many. You know, it was just truly an honor for me to pick your mind a little bit tonight, to let people know how much you truly care. Because if they don't, they should now. You know, you're an aspect of the sport that, whether whether you realize it or not. You're part of the foundation. You're part of the history.
Thank you.
And, you know, legacies can be tainted, but you can't tear down a foundation, and you can't take a name away from history. My friend, you've created history. And for that, I thank you. You know, Shelley, I'm going to pass the mic to you. If you have any final statements, any social media sites, or just anything else that you'd like to share with my listeners and your fans, the floor is yours, my friend.
I guess what I would love to say is, for those of you who have taken the time to listen to our little chat, thank you so much. It means so much to me. And I just hope that we can all hold hands together and make a circle and make a very strong foundation for what we can do with the rest of the time that we have on this earth to help the fighters that need help. Bless them all. And God bless you, Don, for all you do for the sport.
My friend, I wouldn't have it any other way. My grandfather always taught me to give without expectations. And, you know, I'm glad we were able to bring up the topic of the Golden Gloves, because if there's anybody out there, I do not charge to shoot the Golden Gloves. I do not charge the youth to shoot them. And, you know, so if you ever have a promotion or anything like that that you need to take them care of as far as photography, I'll do it for free. You know, that's just how we need to be to make our sport that we love continue and grow. Shelley, it was truly an honor to have you on the show tonight. I look forward to the next time. It was tremendous, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for the time with me. Thank you so much, and thanks to everybody that's listening. God bless you all.
God bless you, my friend. You have a good night. Ladies and gentlemen, such a tremendous lady. You know, I could sit here for hours upon hours and talk to her, but, you know, things must come to an end. On that note, I want to thank my sponsors. Finished MMA with Juan Martinez. Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch-Duran and Juan Ramirez. Bite Me in Mouth Guards with Joe Rice. And last but not least, the86ers.net with Alfred Terran and Freddie Colbert. You know, I apologize for my voice this evening. A little bit under the weather, but the show must go on. With that being said, have a good night, and God bless.
You all appreciate it. When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was the fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said cheers with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hell, hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoopin' to my backside. And even as a crack fiend,